Here and there, across the compound, men began to stir. Back in a corner cell, heavily guarded, barricaded with a wood and iron door, another man heard the noises and began to wake up. He'd been dreaming of other, better days, of sunshine, blue sky, flowers and trees, of a life long since past, dreaming of childhood days, of his mother and his father, dreaming of bright young men and beautiful young women, dreaming of what had been and of what might have been. He woke to the sound of harsh reality as one by one, across the compound, men began to get up. And he reached, groping in the darkness for his sandals. Finding them, he put them on his feet, wrapping them around his legs. Feeling for the wall, he stood up. He was a sight. Thinner now. The food wasn't so good in prison. His face covered with a stubbly growth of beard. His hair grown a little bit now, but matted and dirty. He looked awful. He began to feel along the edge of the wall until he came to the corner. He felt again until he came to the door. He waited at the door for someone to come. And down at the other end of the compound, he heard a shout, a curse, voices crying out, and then the sound of men beginning to get up onto their feet. Standing on the hard rock floor, he reached up almost instinctively to rub his eyes and rub the sleep away. But they weren't there. And for Samson, another day in prison had begun. He never, never dreamed it would come to this, not in his worst nightmares. Samson, the mightiest man of Israel, Samson, hero of his people, Samson, deliverer of the nation, Samson, God's man, in chains, in prison, in Gaza, in Philistine territory. He never dreamed it would happen. Oh, it seemed like such a long time ago now that the angel had appeared to his parents and said, "You're going to have a son." And he had said, "This boy is going to be a Nazarite. He will begin to deliver his people." It was that phrase that was running through Samson's mind that morning, "Begin to deliver his people from the Philistines." And in anger and in rage, he pounded on the wall in frustration. "Oh, how could it have happened to me?" And he remembered yesterday, the day before yesterday, and the day before that, how the guards would come, would open that door, would come in laughing and joking and pushing him, pulling him, grabbing him, and would say, "Come on, Samson, come on, here, boy." And they would take him out to the courtyard and hook him up, hook his arms over that long wooden piece, and they'd say, "Now push." And as Samson began to push, they laughed. They said, "Samson, you donkey, Samson, the donkey." And he pushed, and he pushed, and he pushed. And all day long, blind Samson pushed the gristmill round and round and round. When the day was up, they loosened his hands, fastened them back together, took him back to his cell, and pushed him in. And closed the door and said, "See you tomorrow, Samson." How did a man who started so well end up like this, in humiliation, in disgrace? Well, Samson had never meant to end up like this, of course. He'd just fallen in love with a woman. So what if she was a Philistine? He'd already defeated them. She was pretty, funny, charming, exciting. She lit up all the lights in the sky. She played that dumb game, "Tell me where your powers come from." And before he knew it, she was cradling his head, rubbing her hands through his hair until he fell asleep. Next thing he knew, he woke in chains. He couldn't summon his energy, his power to resist. And the next moment, a red-hot poker burns out his right eye, and then his left, as a symbol of his unfaithfulness to God. They'd taken Samson, now humbled and humiliated, down to the jail in Gaza. There he was grinding corn day after day, and now the day had come. So what was it with Samson that made him end up like this, from the feared leader of Israel to the shame of a Philistine jail? Well, we heard one thing last week too, but just a brief reminder of the first issue really, that Samson never appreciated his spiritual heritage. Back at the start of his life, he had godly parents, a godly background, a godly calling, and the will of God, and the word of God. But Samson never appreciated what he had. And because he didn't appreciate it, he went this way, and he went that way, and he went off track, and he did what he wanted. And it doesn't matter what you've got in your background. If you don't appreciate your spiritual heritage, you're doomed to repeat what Samson did. Now, Samson was finally captured by the Philistines once he'd lost his hair and his strength. But notice, he didn't become weak because his hair was cut. Did God really need for Samson to have a full head of hair to give him strength? If Samson had been bald, would it have made any difference to God, the creator of everything? No. He was weak because, and turn back to verse 20. He awoke from his sleep and thought, I'll go out as before and shake myself free. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. What a sad, crucial statement. The Lord had left him. You see, his strength came from God, and his weakness came from losing touch with God. And what was behind that? Well, probably his pride. It was Samson's pride in his physical power that made him believe he could whip just about anybody who challenged him. It was his pride in his position as a leader in Hebrew society, his pride in his abilities and his prowess that led him to believe that he could get away with whatever he wanted to do. It was his pride that led him to believe it was all right to visit a prostitute, that led him to believe he could maintain an ungodly relationship with the Philistine woman, Delilah. And it was his pride that kept him in Delilah's bedroom night after night, even as she was plotting to betray him, and she wasn't the most subtle. You see, Samson's physical strength became the source of his weakness. His power became the source of his pride. He'd never lost a fight. No one could defeat him. He was a man of power and prestige, and all the time, Samson's emotional pull was to pursue his own agenda and to satisfy himself, disregarding his commission from God. And he chased the wrong things. Now, a few years ago, there was a report from the west coast of America of 300 beached whales. Now, these whales had all come in too close to shore, and as the tide moved out, they'd all become stranded at the same time. And try as they might, the people on the beach and the local authorities and the vets and the Coast Guard, no one was able to move the whales out to sea, and all 300 died. Now, it was such an unusual event, so many whales at the same time, and it seemed such a great mystery until marine biologists investigated and found that these whales had come in chasing sardines. You see, small sardines chased by huge whales, but even a little sardine can bring a giant whale to its death if the whale keeps chasing it long enough. And that's a parable of the life of Samson, a man of enormous resources who wasted his life chasing small goals. And we head into chapter 16, which is why I read the last verse of chapter 15, with Samson as a great leader. He'd been ruling over Israel and bringing peace to that country for 20 years. And then, in chapter 16 and verse 1, he heads back into Philistine territory to see a prostitute. It's a strange biblical twist that someone who started so high, fell so low, climbed back up again and ruled his country for 20 years, should succumb to the same temptation that he did at the beginning when he first got married to a Philistine. And this same problem again leads to his downfall. Now, there are 20 years between the previous event with his marriage that we heard about last week, and this incident with Delilah. And between chapters 15 and 16, Samson ages to about 40 years old, and he'd been successful for 20 years. And as far as we know, there had been peace for Israel. The people would have said that things were pretty sorted in Israel. They might have said that Samson, well, as a young man, you know, he used to be a ladies' man. But that all seems to be in his past now. But as we head into chapter 16, that shows that whilst it might have been in his past, it's not done with. Samson hasn't really dealt with his problems. For 20 years, he swept his problems under the carpet and managed to get life in order. But he didn't really deal with the things that bothered him. And now, at the peak of his power, maybe some sort of midlife itch, looking for the excitement of youth again. Now, that's a challenge for us too. You see, at a point, we can be angry, and then we get over it for a while. Or over here, we're filled with passion or lust, and then we get over it, but we never quite deal with it. And over here, we're filled with greed, and over time, it passes and kind of gradually just subsides. And at some point, we might be arrogant, and we kind of get over it, but we never deal with it. And because we never deal with these issues, then when we least expect it, up comes that anger, up comes the bitterness, up comes the lust and the greed, all the problems that you thought you'd buried years ago. You see, our problems will come back again and again if we don't deal with them decisively. And when they do, they'll be worse than when they first surface, because each time we get a little bit more used to that behaviour. It becomes more familiar to us, and a bit less disappointing and a bit more excusable. And one of the hardest things you'll ever say is, I've got a problem. And one reason why Christians don't grow is because we don't admit our issues. We want to forget them, sweep them under the carpet, turn away into other activities. But maybe we never deal with who we are and what our problems really are. We never get to grips with them, and so they keep coming back up, no matter for how long or how long ago that's been going on. For Samson, it was 20 years. If you haven't dealt with it, you haven't dealt with it. And Samson is exhibit A of that truth. But why didn't Samson deal with his problems? Well, one of the reasons is that he didn't let the truth challenge him enough to really act decisively and submit himself and his will and his powers and his focus to the Lord. It's an important spiritual truth. We read in John chapter 8 and verse 32. It's a well-known verse. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Yes, the truth will set you free, but the chances are it will hurt you first. And another reason why we may not grow as Christians, even though we may come to church, read our Bibles, sing songs, meet with one another, it's not because we don't know enough. We hear the truth in many places. Lack of spiritual truth isn't why we don't always grow as Christians. It's because we may be scared or otherwise reluctant to let the truth we really know begin to hurt us. Scared because we don't want the truth to get close enough to us, close enough that we need to do something about it. Like a protector shield on a spaceship, like Captain Kirk calling out to Spock to raise the shields. When we hear the truth that gets too close for comfort, we raise the shield so that the truth bounces off. We don't want it to get too close because it will hurt before it sets us free. So we might stay angry, bitter, filled with lust and desire, self-willed, greedy, and so on. We're still the way we always were, not because we don't know the truth, but because we're afraid to let the truth get close enough to allow it to do us any good. And the strange thing about Samson is that he thought he was a free man and could do anything he wanted. But he wasn't. He was a slave to his passions, and he lived his life in bondage to his own emotions and never learn to control them. The truly free man or woman is the one who dares to let the truth get close enough to hurt them, because at that point, the truth begins to set you free. Some of us, like Samson, may be controlled by lust or prone to anger, but we dare not admit it. Some are bitter or unforgiving, or otherwise unable to shake off the influence of some other trait that holds some control over us, but we dare not admit that, because we don't want the truth to come close enough to change us. But today was going to be a different kind of day back at the prison, because here come the men. You can hear the sound, that purposeful sound, like someone's coming after you. And the footsteps stop at Samson's door, and the door swings open. What is it? Who is it? Who is it? Samson, you, get up, out of here. Samson feels hands grabbing him, pulling him, pulling him, pulling him. What do you want? Where are you taking me? What's going on? And now they take him, and he thinks they're taking him back to that grist mill to grind the grain again. No, not this time. This time they're taking him outside the prison altogether, with a soldier on this arm and a soldier on that arm. And he's kind of half dragged, half carried, and he can hear voices, voices, crowds. What's going on? Where am I? And a door opens, and they push him through. He's in some kind of arena. And he walks around, and he can feel the sandy floor. And at that moment, he hears the crowds chanting, "Samson, Samson, Samson." And only they're not cheering for him, they're laughing at him. And all of a sudden, he hears another voice crying out, "Dagon, our God, has given our enemy into our hands." And just then it becomes crystal clear. The Philistines have taken him to the temple of Dagon there in Gaza. Dagon was their god, and he was the god of the grain harvest. Every year at seed planting time, they would come and offer sacrifices to Dagon. And every year at harvest time, they would come and offer more sacrifices, praying for good crops and a good harvest. Dagon was the idolatrous god of the Philistines. They built in Gaza a temple for Dagon. It was an open arena. And on the bottom level, and at one end, would have been a pedestal. And that would have been something on which stood the image of Dagon. Around the arena, there would have been steps or chairs for seating. And coming out over the arena, but not completely covering it, would have been a flat roof supported by columns. The roof was supported by two columns right in the middle. And hundreds of people would climb up onto the roof, from which they would get a good vantage point to see whatever was going on down in the arena. And all kinds of things might go on down there. But the Bible says that on this day there were hundreds below and 3,000 Philistines on the roof, all come to see their latest catch. They've come to see Samson. And the Bible says he performed for them. Samson's led out to the middle of the arena in his own shackles. He's wild-looking, skinny, dirty, with a dirty beard, dirty hair. He's groping and staggering. And somebody shouts, "Jump, Samson!" And he jumps. "Run, Samson!" And he runs. "Bark, Samson!" And he barks. "Roll over, Samson!" And like a dog, the mighty Samson rolls over, and in his mind he hears those words, "You shall begin to deliver your people from the Philistines." And on it goes until the crowd tires of the action and they give him a break. Samson picks himself up. He's tired now, and he asks the servant boy, "Where are those two columns? I need to rest." And they take him, and they lean Samson up against those great columns that support the arena. Samson has a plan. He's been waiting for this moment, and he puts his arms like this. And at that point, Samson is coming back to God. He's like the general. He knows that the only way to victory is to lead his troops into battle, even though it means certain death for him. So Samson, with his arms outstretched, looks up to God and begins to pray. And he says, "Oh God, remember me." It might seem an odd statement, but one of the strangest parts of this strange life story is this. Samson had made his bed with the Philistines and the daughters of the Philistines. Therefore, it shouldn't surprise us that he now chooses to die with them. In life and in death, he cannot be separated from them. They thought by capturing him, they'd put an end to him, but in the end, he'll put an end to them. Samson, the mighty man, in one great burst is praying, "Oh God, remember me." And in that prayer, Samson, who's gone so far away from God, has come back and he says, "Oh Lord, remember me." And do we understand what that prayer means? It means, "Lord, I belonged to you at the beginning. Oh Lord, I wandered away. I did some things wrong. Oh God, I made some mistakes. I blew it. Lord, I deserve everything that's happened to me. But God, will you this one time remember me?" That's what that prayer means. As Samson now looks up to the heavens, the people don't understand because he's back under the roof and against the supporting pillars now, and still they're chanting, "Samson, Samson!" And he pushes against the pillars and he pushes, and as he pushes he says, "Oh God, give me strength one more time." And he pushes and pushes and pushes, and the columns begin to crack. They begin to shake, and the columns begin to come down. And from the top of the roof escapes a scream of terror, as the whole thing caves in. And there, in the midst of the rubble, is the body of Samson. And the Bible says he killed more in his death than he did in his life. But the message of this story, in some ways, is nothing about Samson. But it's a tremendous lesson in the grace of God. How a man in his foolishness can reach the bottom, having turned his back on a uniquely blessed start in life. He turned around and found that God was still right there. There's nothing heroic about Samson. God's the hero and his grace. Samson's life teaches us it's not how you begin that matters, it's how you finish. See, over here is Samson's beginning, announced by God, chosen by God, called by God, blessed by God, and filled with the Spirit of God. And if that's all we had of Samson, you'd say, what a hero, what a man. He's going to take over the whole world. And if you come over here to the end, well, he's blind, and he's stumbling around, and he's humiliated. And even at his death, there's vengeance in his voice. And what is it we remember Samson for? His start or his end? Well, it's the end, isn't it? Because it's the way you end that makes the difference. Some of us, probably all of us, didn't have Samson's beginning in life. Some of us will have had hard beginnings or lived in difficult circumstances. Well, here's the good news. And Ralph read this earlier on. In John chapter 6 and verse 37. John chapter 6 and 37. Jesus said, "All that the Father gives me will come to me, and whoever comes to me I will never drive away." You see, there's good news this evening. No matter what your beginning has been, your ending will be better. No matter if you started on top, in the middle, or at the bottom. Jesus said, "All that the Father gives me will come to me, and whoever comes to me, I will never drive out." With God, the ending is always better, no matter what your beginning is like. A question: how far can a person go before God will not deal with them anymore? What if you get drunk? Is that too far? What if you start sleeping around? Is that too far? What if you cheat, you lie or steal? What if you kill somebody? Is that too far? How far can you go? Well, the truth is, nobody knows the answer to that question, because nobody's ever gone far enough to find out. Corrie ten Boom, who wrote in her book about experiences in the Nazi prisoner of war camps and life leading up to that, said this when she was asked, how could you survive as a Christian in those death camps? She said, there isn't a pit so deep that the love of God is not deeper still. How far can you go before God washes his hands of you? I don't know, because nobody's ever gone far enough to find out. There's no distance you can go away from God, that God's not already there with you, waiting for you to come back. Now, you may be here struggling with guilt, even struggling to pray or to come to church, or otherwise labouring with burdens of some sort. Because you, like Samson, know that you've done things that, well, you wish you hadn't, or that you know you shouldn't. That you feel maybe you've missed out on what life could have been for you. The wonderful thing about God's love is that restoration to a right relationship with him doesn't depend upon your performance. How do we know that? Well, look at Samson. He didn't perform anything. He came back to God before he pushed the pillars down. And while still in captivity, still shackled, still blind, God took him and gave him his power again. And there was no performance at all. Despite Samson's past, despite all that he did wrong in his life, the failure to live up to his promise, and the failure to use his gifts purely for God, to be the great man that we might have wanted him to be. And the thing that keeps so many of us from God is we think we've got to clean up our act before God will accept us. You say, God won't take me with dirty hands. You know, that's the only way he'll take you. You either come to God that way, or you don't come at all. Because you can't make yourself clean. You can't remove the past. The story of Samson gives hope for people like you and me who've really blown it. If you're waiting until you're good enough, you'll wait forever. For Samson, it took him a long time to figure that one out. You see, Samson's the original comeback kid. He came back to God before he died. And for all our criticism of Samson, in the end, he comes back to God. And Samson's now forever listed among the heroes of Israel. If you look at Hebrews chapter 11, and what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised. You see, Samson's listed among the heroes. What a legacy. So where are you with the Lord tonight? Maybe you need to do what Samson did and say, Lord, remember me. You see, there's a whole lot of Samson in a lot of us. We can place all of that at the foot of the cross, and in his grace, Jesus says, I'll take that from you. Whoever comes to me, I will never drive out.